Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
This is a confidence show, especially when Frank Isola rolls in. He is at the Frank Isola. I think that's right. If it's not, I continue to mess up his Twitter handle, and he can correct me. Around the Horn, The Athletic, also Sirius XM. Is there panic in the Big Apple yet, Frank, over the possibility that Kevin Durant is going to spurn the Knicks' best offer?
Clay, come on. You know that's the case. It's funny, too, as you get closer to July 1st, it's almost like Kevin Durant is looking at the Knicks and saying, you know, they have had the worst record in the NBA the last 18 years, and they are 17-65. And even if Kyrie Irving were to come with me, oh, boy, I don't know if we're going to be able to turn things around that quickly. I'm going to be 31 next season. I don't understand how Kevin Durant could look at what's going on in Golden State and just say, you know what, why don't I just sign the max? I could still make the most money. We might be able to win two more championships after this season. I get it. Well, he was chasing championships with the Warriors. But guess what? It's working out. The reason he left to go to Golden State was to win, and it's working. So why stop now?
It's also interesting, and I'm curious if you agree with me, the pursuit of championships is not about the immediate, necessarily galvanizing way that a championship can legitimize you. It seems to me that it's more about when your career is over and people want to sit around and debate how good players were, that championships are a major, you know, sort of a selling point of that aspect of the decision making. And so my thought is here for Kevin Durant, don't you not worry? Like, do you think people are going to sit back? Nobody now, when they talk about Kobe Bryant, says, oh yeah, but Kobe was maybe playing second fiddle on some of those championships with Shaq. We forget all the little details, and it just turns into a sheer numbers game. How many did you win, and what exactly your role was on those teams when we know you're good? I'm not talking about like Robert Horry, where we sit around and talk about Robert Horry winning championships, and everyone knows, oh, Robert Horry wasn't one of the best players of his generation, even though he won a lot. Nobody's going to argue that Durant wasn't one of the best teams of his generation. So ultimately, it's just going to be a numbers game. And 10 years from now, when Kevin Durant has retired, people are just going to say he won X number of championships, and the debate will be probably, I think, between him, Steph, and LeBron over who was the best player of their generation. I think that's where we're going to be.
I think as you get further away from it, I mean, look at guys like Magic Johnson. No one says, well, Magic, you played with Kareem. Kareem, some people think, is the best player that ever played in
right.
the game. There were times when he was the most unstoppable force. Scottie Pippen's on TV all the time. Scottie Pippen, I believe, played with the greatest player of all time, Michael Jordan. It's not like every time Scottie Pippen's interviewed, it's, Scottie Pippen has six NBA titles, but remember, though, he played second fiddle to Michael Jordan, which is kind of the reason why he won the six titles. No, people look at Scottie Pippen as an unbelievable player who won six championships. So I think the further you get away from it, that'll be the case. So the Knicks fan, the Nets fan, the Clipper fan, Oklahoma City fan is going to sit there and say, well, to legitimize yourself, you really have to leave the Warriors to win. I think 10, 20, 30 years from now, people are going to look back and say, man, Kevin Durant was part of one of the greatest teams in the history of the sport. And oh, by the way, he was a two-time finals MVP, and in the finals, he outplayed LeBron both times. So you just mentioned the discussion about LeBron, greatest of the generation. Well, Durant has met him three times in the finals and beat him twice.
Yeah, and it certainly is worth considering, too, here, I think, as you break it down, that, like you said, they could probably win another couple of championships. Now, I do think that I'm curious if you agree with me here, that if Durant doesn't play at all, in other words, he's not able to come back healthy, it makes it much more likely that he leaves. And the reason why I would say that is I think Durant cares way too much about what people say about him. I think he spends way too much time on social media. Maybe this is partly because of the generational move. I think it's also that Durant's not married. He doesn't have kids. He cares a lot about what people think about him, which is crazy to me because he's the best in the world probably at what he does, and he cares about what some random anonymous loser on Instagram or Twitter is saying about him. I don't know if this happens in other professions, Certainly it happens with our president, unfortunately. But it's like, hey, you know what? You are the best right now at what you do. There's nobody else who has your title. Maybe don't spend time worrying about what people say about you on Instagram, but I think Durant, if he doesn't play at all in the finals and the Warriors go on and win the championship, might leave because the criticism of him will be, oh, Golden State never needed Durant to win a championship at all. If you doubt me, look at how good they played once he got injured.
And I think he should thank Adam Silver for the fact that the schedule kind of works out for him because they, you know, the NBA Finals don't start until a week from tonight. So by the time the finals start, that's going to be 3 weeks since he got injured. Even if he misses games one and two, if he were then returned for game three, that's 4 weeks. So I do think at some point we're still going to see Kevin Durant. Now, if we don't, I do agree with your theory from this standpoint. You know, you look at him just recently, even with Chris Broussard, some of the stuff that Chris said on TV and Kevin Durant going after him. I think it's only human nature for a guy to sit back and think, man, they're winning without me. That kind of diminishes what I've done. And I think he's proven in the past to be overly sensitive. Now, I know his agent a little bit, Rich Kleiman. I was cracking up when Rich Kleiman did that thing with the Wall Street Journal and he was asked about Kevin Durant on Twitter. He said, oh, I love when he engages fans. I think he's being authentic and honest. I'm like, Rich, he used a fake account once to go after people. That's not authentic and honest. That's the opposite of that. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, when you find people who, you know, as they get a little bit older, especially into their 30s and 40s and they're not married and they don't have kids, it's you naturally become – you know, probably more selfish than the average person because all you ever really do think about is yourself. And I think for Kevin Durant, it's got to be weird because on the one hand, I think his teammates clearly like him and give Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson credit. After every game, they talk about, we need Kevin Durant. It's very smart of them to say that. So it's not kind of building up this idea of, hey, they don't want Kevin Durant on the team. But you cannot tell me as he's sitting there watching that, in the back of his mind, he's like, man, they're actually doing better without me than we were. I mean, we did blow a 31-point lead to the Clippers when I was playing. They're undefeated since I stopped playing.
I think that Durant is a perfect example of a guy that would have better, you know, overall opinion in the nation if he didn't have social media at all. And I've made this argument before. Social media is great. If you're on the periphery, like we're media members, it's great for what we do, I think, net positive. I think it's great if you are a mid-tier player and you want to set yourself up for a post-playing career because that gives you an opportunity to have a voice. And usually, if you're not one of the top two or three players on a team, people just don't care about what your opinion is. So I think that can certainly be a benefit. But I think when you break it down in general, guys who are the best at what they do, the Michael Jordans of the world, the Peyton Mannings of the world, honestly, the Tom Brady's of the world, and I would put Kevin Durant in that category, I don't think they gain anything by social media. And I mean legitimately being involved in social media. I don't see Tom Brady interacting that often with people on his social media accounts, and he's only done it in the past couple of years. And I think he's done it because he wants to do that for whatever reason. You can think this is crazy, that TB12 method. I think he's thinking he's going to make a lot of money on that after his career is over, whenever it finishes. But for most of their career, I think if you're the best, there's zero benefit to being active on social media.
Well, and look at Magic Johnson. I don't know why he thinks it helps him, especially after what's gone on with the Lakers. I mean, first of all, his tweets are terrible, and then you read, like, the fans' reaction to it, and he gets destroyed all the time. It's almost like they're too big for that. Like, why even bother? And I think, like, Michael Jordan is a perfect example of it. It's like, for Michael Jordan, in a kind of an arrogant way that you can almost appreciate, he's like, this is all beneath me. Why do I need to do this stuff? I'm Michael Jordan. And Kevin Durant, you wonder if he should think that way as well. And Kevin Durant went from being, I remember saying to him, asking him this 2 years ago at the All-Star game, it's like when you leave Oklahoma City, you were like the lovable superstar. You were in the small market when he had the speech that he gave when he won MVP that went on for about 45 minutes and he thanked everybody from the owner of the team to the janitor and he was crying and thanking his mother. But when you make that move to Golden State, I'm always blown away by how naive you can be. I said you became, in a sports sense, a villain. It's not that you're a terrible person, but a lot of people are going to look at it like you left a great team to go to one of the greatest teams of all time. So people like that about sports. They like having villains. LeBron, when he went to Miami, was a villain, and LeBron clearly struggled with that. I just don't understand why these guys don't play this stuff through their head. You're allowed to make whatever move you want to make. we're also allowed to say, I don't really like it. I think it messes up the balance of power in the NBA. And for him to be so put off by people's reacting to that, it showed a level of immaturity, and he wasn't getting the best advice.
Also, if you embrace your role as a villain, do you know what ends up happening? People like you, you know? So it circles back around pretty quickly. And it's not – you're an entertainer. It's not – you know, the last great villain, I would say, that we have had in the world of sports – is Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd Mayweather's like, man, you know what? I'll play whatever role you want me to play as long as you show up for my boxing matches, and I'm going to become a billionaire, and I'll roll with it. And most guys, and maybe it's unique to boxing because they have that pay-per-view benefit, and guys are so worried about their endorsements that it's hard for villains to get endorsements because, I don't know, Pepsi and McDonald's don't want to spend money on the guy who's wearing the black hat as opposed to the white hat. I think that's probably ultimately what it's about. It's about the money. But I would embrace the villainy. To his credit, back in the day, we started off talking about him a little bit because we were talking about Drake on the courtside seats. Reggie Miller embraced being a villain. I mean, he was a great NBA villain. He was willing to wear the black hat. Charles Barkley was willing back in the day, and now he's like the most beloved guy probably in the NBA. In terms of approval ratings. But back in the day, Charles Barkley was willing to be, you know, like kind of the jerk, willing to be the ass, willing to be the villain. And I think ultimately we found out about his personality. But, you know, Barkley didn't have this lovable image for much of his career, if you remember, in the NBA. You know, he was the guy who wasn't quite good enough to be Michael Jordan. He wasn't as funny. He wasn't as irreverent. He didn't have the personality that he has now. You know, there are some guys who had that kind of lovable personality while they played. Shaq is an example, and they obviously are on Inside the NBA now, but Barkley didn't have that back in the day. And so I think there's this, I mean, you remember, like, we really miss out, I think, in the world of sports now. Who's the greatest team sport villain in all of American pro sports right now? It's almost hard to even find one.
I know. It's almost like LeBron is still somewhat polarizing. I mean, he's not necessarily a villain. I think when he definitely went to Miami was. In the case of Charles, remember Charles did some stuff, like he got into it with a fan, and he went to spit on the guy, and then he ended up hitting the guy's daughter, which is a big thing. He threw a guy through a window. Plus, Charles was big. He had like a cartoonish type of body. He wasn't afraid to go back and forth with fans. I mean, come on, it's social media, and everyone's got a cell phone camera back then. Think about how Charles Barkley would be viewed.
Barkley's also a great example. He's not on Twitter or social media either. Doesn't seem to be heard of him.
You're right. And you never know. Like, and you know, some guys, they drink a little bit, and then they're going on social media, which is kind of the worst thing that you could do. Reggie Miller with us, when I was covering playoff games, Reggie was great because Reggie was even a jerk to, like, the New York media.
Yeah.
He viewed us as an extension of the team. So we would go in the locker room either before or after game. He wanted, like, nothing to do with us. And now, of course, Reggie's like Mr. Media Friendly, but that's like he loved the fact that he came to Madison Square Garden and the fans hated him, and he would drive John Starks crazy, he would drive Pat Riley crazy, then Jeff Van Gundy. I remember telling Kurt Thomas once, because Reggie like would flop. Reggie was like the, you know, Manu Ginobili, Vlade Divac. He was like the premier American flopper for a while there. And I remember telling Kurt Thomas, said, when he flops, like, why don't you like step on him? And Kurt Thomas, who's crazy and pretty funny, I'm at a game, and that's exactly what happened. And he went to step over Reggie Miller like he was going to pretend like he was going to step on his head, and that caused like a bit of a scuffle. Not a fight, but, you know, the Knicks players were obsessed with Reggie Miller because he knew how to get under their skin. He knew how to get under the fan skin as well.
What do you think about this Drake controversy? Now, you've watched and covered a lot of NBA games. I have never seen a courtside seat fan massage a head coach during a game. I don't care how famous you are. Jack Nicholson wasn't out there with Pat Riley. We never saw Spike Lee run down the court with Jeff Van Gundy back in the day and start massaging the coach's shoulders. I mean, what do you think about this? This is kind of a different level of ridiculousness, isn't it?
I just find the whole thing to be insufferable. And, you know, I like Spike Lee, but Spike's almost 60 years old, I think, now. And, you know, he still kind of serves as almost like the mascot of the team. And Drake clearly wants to be that for the Toronto Raptors. But I always say, I've been saying this for a couple of days. I remember one thing, Drake. We know you like to be super fan. You were not at the biggest win in the history of the team, Game 7. You were, whatever the reason was, you were not there. You weren't there when Kawhi Leonard hit that big shot. So spare me with the super fan thing. And the idea that, like, he has to be part of the game. But why does TNT have to play into it? Why do we have to see this guy constantly? For the people in the arena, I'm sure it drives them nuts that he's constantly standing up and acting like he's the coach. But us watching on TV, I don't care about Drake. I don't want to see him nonstop on TV making fun of people, standing up, massaging Nick Nurse. Enough with Drake already.
What do you think is going to happen in Game 5 tonight?
I'm a little worried about the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, their offense has not been good. Five guys standing around the three-point line. You know, it seemed like their offense was either Giannis driving into the teeth of the defense, driving in the three guys, or one of his teammates shooting a contested three. Meanwhile, the guys on Toronto won't make an open shot. And you know how it is, Clay. Will your bench play better on the road? So we know why Toronto won the other night. It was Kyle Lowry, and it was, you know, Norman Powell, Ibaka, Fred VanVleet. How will those guys do on the road tonight? I'm not so sure. And something's up with Kawhi Leonard. The media loves playing into this whole thing about fatigue. I don't think he's fatigued. I think his leg is clearly bothering him. He's not moving that well. And to his credit, he toughed it out and he played well. The hardest thing to do is to play hurt but still play well, and Kawhi did that. That, to me, is the big thing. How is Kawhi tonight? Because I'll tell you this, if Milwaukee loses this game, I do not think they'll win the next two games. I think they're going to go out in game six. So they're probably, in my opinion, they're playing for their season tonight.
I agree with you on that. What about the let's go back to the Kevin Durant drama. If you had to predict right now, where is Kevin Durant going to re-sign? Where would you pick?
If I were him, I'd stay in Golden State. I'm still going to say the Knicks because there's part of me that wonders, is this a bit of a misdirection by the Durant camp? Because everyone, you know, at the Chicago Combine, the word from a lot of NBA executives, oh, it's already a done deal. Maybe they're worried about tampering. So it's just what a strange coincidence that all of a sudden now there's all this stuff about the Clippers. So I'm still going to say the Knicks. He should stay in Golden State, but it sounds like he's going to be on the move.
All right, if he goes and joins the Knicks, who do you think he's going to be able to persuade to come with him? Who do you think the favorite would be? Is it Kyrie? Is it, like, what do you think? Do you think he's got another superstar lined up? Or do you think maybe the Knicks are going to make a move for Anthony Davis? What do you think in an ideal world is the Knicks' game plan?
Well, I think for them, it would be probably Kemba Walker and Anthony Davis. I think the one thing that worries them about Kyrie Irving is, you know, the history of injury problems that he's had with his knee. That's number one. And also what happened this year up in Boston, where, you know, he wasn't exactly the guy that brought everyone together in the locker room. If your point guard's going to kind of be a flaky kind of guy like that, that's a little troublesome. The Knicks went through that once before with Stephon Marbury, where nobody on the team liked him. It's, when your point guard is not liked, that's never a good thing. It's like having a quarterback that nobody likes. It's usually not going to work out. I do think this for Durant, I think he's only coming if he knows that someone else is going to be here. From everything that I've heard, Kyrie Irving wants to live in New York, but don't rule out Boston just yet. A lot of stuff can happen between now and July 1st, including Boston making a run at Anthony Davis. I think if Anthony Davis ends up getting traded to Boston, I think that Kyrie would stay. And remember, too, all that trouble that Kyrie's having, some of those, clearly Jaylen Brown and Kyrie have an issue, but Jaylen Brown would likely be traded in a deal for Anthony Davis. And Terry Rozier probably won't return. So some of the more outspoken guys that seem to have an issue with Kyrie Irving won't be on the team next year, and all of a sudden things change a little bit.
Outstanding stuff as always, Frank Isola. You can find him on Twitter at the Frank Isola. You can watch him on Around the Horn as well. Appreciate it, my man.
All right, Clay, take care.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I know we're probably going to talk about this multiple times. Probably going to be a big topic in general. What should Kevin Durant do? But I think the permutations and outcomes all kind of circle back around to what happens in the NBA Finals. If Kevin Durant comes back healthy, plays well, and the Golden State Warriors win the title, I think anyone who advises Kevin Durant to leave Golden State is an absolute ignoramus. If the Golden State Warriors come back and win a title without Kevin Durant, I think that anybody who advises Kevin Durant to leave is still an ignoramus. But I think that Kevin Durant is a perfect example of the desire in the millennial generation to be obsessed inside of their phones with what people are saying about them and allow that to define them in some way. Let me talk about this for a sec. There's a big debate going on right now between Kevin Durant and Chris Broussard. Chris Broussard, I like. Really talented guy. Comes on Lock It In. Obviously has his own show. I don't blame Chris Broussard at all for interacting with Kevin Durant, for sending him Twitter messages, Instagram messages, however they're communicating. I don't blame Chris Broussard for communicating with Kevin Durant. I think it's crazy that Kevin Durant wants to communicate with Chris Broussard. Let me explain. I've said the same thing about Donald Trump, right? And Donald Trump, despite the fact that he's a lot older, is kind of a quintessential millennial in some ways too, in the way that he responds to social media and reacts to it. I said, look, if I got elected president of the United States, I wouldn't care at all how I got elected president of the United States. You know how Donald Trump, since he got elected president, has been obsessed with how many people are showing up at his inauguration, with how he won, because he didn't win the popular vote. He won by the Electoral College. Those are the rules, right? For people out there who are complaining because Donald Trump won the presidency because of the Electoral College as opposed to the popular vote, you're like people out there who say, yeah, well, yeah, granted that team won four games in a seven-game series, but the team that won three games scored more overall points than the team that won the four games. So, I don't care. I play by the rules in front of me, and I won. It's hard to get elected president. Any way possible that I could get elected president, I'd be even cockier than I am right now. Do you think I'd care about critics who were like, oh yeah, Clay Travis got elected president, but he didn't win the popular vote? So? That would be my response. So what? You critics are idiots. Nobody sits around after a seven-game series and says, well, yeah, they did win the seven-game series, but they got outscored overall over the course of the seven-game series. No, you play to win the series. You got to win four games. Doesn't matter how you win the four games. To win the presidency, you got to get whatever the number is in the Electoral College. And you get elected president. That's the rules. Everything else is just noise. But the president of the United States, I think, unfortunately, I think he's got his phone out and he's scrolling through and is seeing what people say about him. I'm like, dude, you're the president. Don't read your mentions. Just be president. Kick ass. Be above the fray. I've been saying this for a long time. Donald Trump, if you didn't use social media, your approval ratings in this country would be 10 points higher. Economy, all-time great. No matter who you are, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, unemployment rate has never been lower in just about everybody's lifetime. I think you have to go all the way back to like 1969 in the middle of the Vietnam War, so I'm not even sure that that counts because we had a draft going on, when the unemployment rate has been lower in this country. Most of us have never made more money. We've never had a better overall economy. Never been safer. All these things are working in favor of Donald Trump. If he just didn't tweet and make people mad, he'd have 10 points higher on his approval rating. I'm not even kidding about that. Because you look at the objective measures, he really hasn't done that much from a negative perspective in terms of actual policy. Almost everything is about tweets that get people all triggered. Kevin Durant is the best player in the world in basketball, yet much like Donald Trump, he's obsessed with people who are much less successful than him giving their opinions of him. That comes with the job. When you are the best in the world at something, a lot of people look at you and they have opinions about you. But you shouldn't care about those opinions because you should just go out and dominate. Now, if you want to use those opinions as fuel, if you want to marinate in them, I guess you can do that. If you feel the need to have doubters who are trying to tear you down, I guess that can be fuel for you if you need it. But I certainly don't need Kevin Durant sending DMs to Chris Broussard about how good of a basketball player he is. Dude, we watch the games. You're the best basketball player in the world. Care less. Find a hobby. In all seriousness. And I wonder on some level for Durant whether this is what happens when you're not married and you don't have kids and your work defines you almost exclusively. You know people like this, right? And there are a lot who are good at their job, but they have nothing else outside of their job. And as a result, their job almost defines them completely. You have nothing else that is balancing your life. You work 100 hours a week, and then you go home and you sleep, and your job is who you are. Now, that's fine if you love your job. That's fine. But a lot of people talk about work-life balance. You got a family. You got obligations outside of what you do for a living. When I take this headset off at 8:54 Eastern, I go immediately downstairs and eat breakfast with all three of my kids in my house. And I immediately go from Clay Travis radio guy to dad. I take my kids to school. It's a couple of hours where I'm not very active usually on social media because I'm kind of getting my morning started. And then I go back into my work life and I'll work. And then typically when I'm done at 4:30, I'm right back to dad. Kids are getting out of school. I'm right back into dad life. As much as I might want to be defined by what I do for a living, I can't do it because I've got other things and other obligations that go on in my life. I think Kevin Durant is so consumed by his job that he's not only consumed by getting better at his job, he's consumed by what people think about him doing his job. And there's a little bit of Donald Trump in him, even though Trump's got a family and got kids and everything else. I don't know that social media has been beneficial to either man really at all. Because I think it's changed the way that we see them, and not in a good way. I mean, think about how crazy this is. Kevin Durant created fake burner accounts on social media to respond to people that he doesn't know about how good of a basketball player he is. I mean, that's crazy. He's the best basketball player in the world, and yet he's so insecure that he's creating fake Twitter accounts to respond to his critics who are anonymous losers who have nothing better to do, and the best basketball and the player in the world is allowing them to get under their skin. So if I am giving Kevin Durant advice, I'm saying, dude, you aren't made for this. You are not made for the New York media market. Look at what happened to LeBron when he went to the Lakers. The dude's career blew up. Not in a good way. He went to the Lakers. He got injured. The team stunk. And LeBron got destroyed. But LeBron didn't really have great options compared to Durant. He could have stayed in Cleveland, and he knew he wasn't going to win a championship there. I think LeBron made the calculated decision. I'm ready to finish my career in Los Angeles. I might as well go ahead and go play for the Lakers. Maybe we can put together a team that's good enough to contend for a championship. But he knew after back-to-back beatdowns from the Golden State Warriors that his team had no real chance in Cleveland of winning a championship. So at least LeBron moving to the Lakers made some sense, because there wasn't necessarily a championship opportunity for him in that move, necessarily. Durant, on the other hand, is right now on the team that is probably going to win the championship this year for their third straight, and would be a big favorite no matter where anybody else moves to potentially win a fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe even seventh championship in a row with the Golden State Warriors if he just stays put. In the long run, if Kevin Durant stays with the Golden State Warriors, nobody in 10 years is going to talk about Kevin Durant being a part of a super team and not really deserving credit for those championships. Nobody out there says about Kobe Bryant, yeah, he won a bunch of championships, but he got to play with Shaq. Nobody says about Shaq's championships, yeah, he got to play, he got to win some championships, but he had to go from Orlando to go to LA and play with Kobe to do it. And then he had to come back to Miami and he had to play with Dwayne Wade to do it. Shaq was never the best player on the teams that he won. Not true, but nobody makes that argument. Nobody makes that argument about Kobe because ultimately, if your goal is to stack championships, all we do is look at the championship stack and assess it. So if Kevin Durant wants to really play for his legacy right now and make a decision about how he will be seen long after his career is over, he needs to win as many championships as possible. Because I think the value of going to New York and winning a title is incredibly overrated in that arena. Am I crazy or have I made a ton of sense? We'll bring in the crew in the next segment. In the meantime, you can go vote in our poll question. And the poll question is up on Twitter. It says quite simply, if you were advising Kevin Durant, where would you tell him to go? These are the top four most likely teams per Odd Shark. Knicks, Warriors, Clippers, and the Brooklyn Nets are the options I gave you. And right now, 37% of you, with 4,000 votes in the first 20 minutes or so here, 37% of you are agreeing with me that he should stay with the Warriors. 33% are saying he should go to the Knicks. 19% are saying he should go to the Clippers. 11% saying he should go to Brooklyn.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Britt McHenry joins us now. I think she's at the airport. Britt, what's up?
Hey, Clay. Yeah, we are boarding, so you have my undivided attention until I have to board the plane.
That's outstanding. Where are you headed, New York?
Yes, doing the weekly Fox trip up on UnPC, the show I host on Fox Nation, and some other things. I'm actually interviewing some of the women's soccer team players tomorrow morning, so still have that foot in sports.
So that's pretty cool. Are you? So how are you liking the new show? And tell people how they can find it if they haven't watched it yet.
I like it. You can download the app, Fox Nation. It's doing extremely well. Way more subscribers up at this point than they expected, which is a good sign. And I think people are watching. It's fun because we'll talk about like five topics a show. There's no commercials. It kind of has a radio free form to it, like your show does, but not quite your show. You've been on it. So,
yeah, I had a good time.
Yeah, we've made some changes to the show, too, to make it better. And then I'll do typical Fox News hits as well. But I'm still trying to push the sports because, you know, that never goes away.
So speaking of pushing the sports, you're about to board a plane to go to New York. You're in D.C. yeah. right now. Would you advise Kevin Durant to come back across the country and go play for the Knicks? Or do you think the New York media would eat him up and chew him up and spit him out?
I don't think he could handle it. You know, Kevin Durant is one of the best basketball players in history. We'll go down as that. But his mentality, his stability with the media just isn't there. And as good as Golden State is, he's been sheltered, in my opinion, with the Bay media, San Francisco media, Oklahoma City media. Neither of those cities are going to be anything like New York, Philadelphia. Probably those two cities would be one and two. So I just, it's a franchise that doesn't have any end in sight to really sustaining any type of success. And I kind of side with Russell Westbrook that he's a cupcake. I don't think he can handle it.
And I'm fascinated by this in general. Do you think Kevin Durant would have had a better career if social media didn't exist? In other words, like he's creating anonymous burner accounts and everything else.
Is he still doing that?
I don't know. I mean, well, have you seen the latest story about him, you know, sending DMs to Chris Broussard? They've been going back and forth a lot about his decision-making. And it's just, I don't know how many athletes are paying attention to what's being said, at least as publicly as Kevin Durant is, right? He's sitting around watching Skip Bayless. He's watching Stephen A. Smith. He's watching their shows kind of every day and almost interacting with them in a way, which is a little bit strange, I think, for somebody who's probably the best in the world at what he does.
I think if there was no social media, it would help all of our careers. So I can't really hate on Kevin Durant for that, because you know that feeling too, Clay. the same people who hate you are watching your Periscope feeds, apparently, like Jemele Hill. That cracked me up yesterday when I saw you tweet that out. Such a joke. But I think that, that's a distraction he shouldn't be partaking in. Or earlier in the season when he said he wasn't going to answer any questions about free agency, it's like it comes with the territory. And I used to say this all the time when I would interview Steven Strasburg and he would get surly and he would get an attitude. It's like when you're making $175 million plus, I don't feel sorry for you. Bryce Harper, I don't feel sorry for you, $330 million, you know? So we don't have compassion, I feel like, when they're at that threshold. And he has a lot of pressure on his back, but that's what comes with being great. But I definitely think if there was social media around the time Michael Jordan was playing, he would have been in some serious trouble, too. I don't think anyone's immune to it.
You mentioned Jemele, and for people out there who don't know, Jemele Hill blocked me on Twitter, but is watching. Yeah, is watching my Outkick show on Periscope and Facebook. So I gave her a shout-out yesterday on the show. I thought that was pretty funny. But in conjunction with that, the new president of ESPN came out and made some pretty aggressive statements about kind of the way that ESPN had lost its way. And I'm going to read the quote. And I know you didn't work with Jimmy Pitaro, but I did think this was interesting. And he said, without question, this is from the LA Times, without question, our data tells us our fans don't want us to cover politics. My job is to provide clarity. I really believe that some of our talent was confused on what was expected of them. If you fast forward to today, I don't believe they are confused. I mean, he's coming in like the sheriff here, right? And basically saying, hey, I'm going to clean up this mess. Does a part of you wish that he had been in charge when you were there?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I don't like to look back because there's no point in doing that. And I'm happy with the direction I've gone because it opens up the possibility for both politics, social commentary, and sports. But it is very disheartening for the 100 on-air people who were laid off to know that a lot of those decisions were Game of Thrones politically motivated. And particularly in my case, you know, I heard 6 months after I left, the same person responsible, the only person responsible for putting me on that list, from what I heard, was demoted. So, you know, it's bittersweet because there was a lot of really talented people, Sarah Walsh, Ed Werder, Andy Katz, I mean, I could go on, who were a product of that political climate under the former president. And I have no beef now with them. I think ESPN has improved dramatically. It's been a long time, you know, it's been 2 years since I've been there. But from what I hear, people that still work there that are my friends are happier with the let's have the sports dictate what we talk about. However, I have heard that there is some unhappiness with the overall Disney corporate culture that's taking over, because that's a conglomerate now, as you know, with all their properties that they just purchased up from Fox.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. You mentioned Game of Thrones. I know you're a huge Game of Thrones fan. What letter grade would you give the series finale?
You know, I didn't hate it as some of the other episodes this season. I really didn't like the big battle at Winterfell season, or episode 4.
Yeah.
You know, my girl was Khaleesi, so I feel like how are you going to do her like that? Like, at least give us some insight as to where Drogon went off to. But I would give it a C. I do like that Drogon destroyed the throne. I thought that was pretty cool. Like, essentially, she still did break the wheel.
So,
what's your assessment?
Oh, I gave it. I really didn't like it, but I do think that the more I went back and watched it again, and to me, it seems like an advertisement for this show's not over. Right. And I think the actors and actresses who are on this show are, I don't know that any of them are going to have like that superhero vibe when they go to other shows. Like, you know, I think they're all going to be so defined by Game of Thrones that my prediction is within 3 years, there is a new Game of Thrones because the money is so substantial. And I wouldn't be shocked if all of these people come back. Maybe initially it's a spinoff with Jon Snow, North of the Wall. But I also wouldn't shock me if Daenerys isn't dead. Like, there have been so many people brought back to life in so many different directions. It would not stun me if they put the band back together again in a couple of years.
Yeah, or focus, even though they're denying it now, focus the series on Arya.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that was kind of ridiculous. I wanted a more deadly death for Cersei, and I wanted more. And I read that Emilia Clarke who plays Daenerys Targaryen, said this too. She wanted more dialogue with Cersei instead of just burning up the city. I mean, you had such great actors there. It felt completely rushed. They just wanted to get the series over so the two writers could go write for Star Wars. And I think some of the PC woke stuff was seeping into Game of Thrones at the end, too. Like, that clearly wasn't George R. R. Martin's writing.
So what do you think about, did you see Aaron Rodgers' breakdown? I thought it was the most interesting thing Aaron Rodgers has ever said in the locker room.
Well, no, what did he say?
Oh, Aaron, we're going to play that again probably before the week's out. But Aaron Rodgers broke it down and basically had many of the same criticisms that you and I did of the way that that finished. But I agree with you. I think that Daenerys and Cersei deserved a scene together, right? Because for all the time that we saw them, there was very limited ever interaction between the two, and they never were one-on-one in a room together in any kind of face-to-face confrontation.
And it's a shame, right? I mean, I think also, too, I had expected, I think all the fans wanted an Arya-Cersei showdown. Even if she wasn't the one to kill her, I just felt it was really lame and rushed. And I don't know, I can't decide whose cameo was better. Noah Syndergaard or Ed Sheeran or Aaron Rodgers. I can't pick for one of those for Game
of
Thrones.
Well, Ed Sheeran had an actual speaking role, so I think like he was far and away like more significant than the other guys. But there was almost a revolt over the Ed Sheeran performance, so I think they had to slide in Aaron Rodgers. I didn't even know Syndergaard was actually in the game at all. In the show at all. All right, I know you got to hop on the flight. I appreciate you joining us early this morning. Good luck with the show. Have a good flight up to New York, and keep your eyes peeled for Kevin Durant.
Awesome. Great talking to you. Bye, Clay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I am geared up here. Final day of school. Fifth grader, second grader, they're done. Still got another 2 years till my youngest is in school. But summer season about to start in the Travis household. So as come about noon, they got a half day of school. Come about noon, I'll be on the road, got the car loaded up, ready to travel down to the beach. I will be out tomorrow. Jason Martin will be in. I will be out for Memorial Day. And then we'll see whether or not we get a game seven. I may take off Tuesday too. Take a long Memorial Day weekend. We'll see how exactly that goes. If there's a game seven, I'll be back in Tuesday. Regardless, show will go on. I'll just be out for a couple days. Let me put a bow on this. Asked early on in the show, let's see what the latest is. 13,000 of you have voted. If you were advising Kevin Durant, where would you tell him to go? These are the top four most likely teams per Odd Shark. The Knicks, the Warriors, the Clippers, the Brooklyn Nets, in order. That is the most likely according to the offshore odds markets. And right now, the Golden State Warriors, you guys are telling me 37% of you are saying stay with Golden State. 33% of you are saying go to the Knicks. 19% go to the Clippers. And 11% go to Brooklyn. Now, the Golden State Warriors, potentially with Kevin Durant, if he is able to come back healthy, potentially with DeMarcus Cousins, hopefully with Andre Iguodala, who seems to be the less severely injured of that crew, will be taking on probably the winner of tonight's Game 5. And tonight in Game 5 going on, we have got the Milwaukee Bucks hosting the Toronto Raptors. 84% of the time, the team that wins Game 5 wins the series overall in the NBA when it's tied up 2-2. So I am going to take the Milwaukee Bucks on the money line. I don't think there's any way the Milwaukee Bucks lose, but I also think 7, which is where this is right now, the Bucks are a 7-point favorite, a little bit too high with the way the Raptors are playing. So I am taking the Bucks on the money line, but I would take the Raptors to cover the 7. What about you, Danny G?
You actually took the under on the TV show yesterday too, right?
I argued the under. I didn't bet it.
Okay.
Furman was all in on the under. So Todd Furman, who is obviously the best gambler on the show, according to the season, is on the under in this game as well.
The over-under is going to be interesting in this one, but I have to agree. Like I said yesterday on the show, I think it's going to be the Bucks in 7. Each home team is going to win here to finish out the series. So with that said, the Bucks are not losing in Milwaukee
tonight. So you like the Bucks on the money line, but what about the 7-point line?
I mean, Vegas obviously knows what they're talking about. I think they're going to win by 6.
Yeah, all right. So you're taking the Raptors plus 7. What about you, Dub? How would you break this one down?
the home team has dominated the series. I'll keep rolling with that trend. I'll take Milwaukee minus the 7 points.
So you think they're going to cover. Roberto, how would you play this?
Yeah, I think Milwaukee's going to win in a blowout.
Blowout?
Yeah, it's not even going to be close.
Yeah, you know what? It is really kind of intriguing to think about because I kind of think this is going to go seven. I feel like the home teams are going to keep winning and that the Bucks are going to win in seven games and that Rachel Bonetta, who is Canada's number one fan this side of Drake, is going to be crushed on behalf of her country because if you think about Canada, they really haven't ever won anything in pro sports, at least that really matter. Like, they are obsessed with hockey, and they haven't won a Stanley Cup since, like, 1994, something like that. Like, it's been a long-ass time now, 25 years, basically, of Canada not winning the Stanley Cup. And the Raptors have never been to the NBA Finals. The best they've ever done is they lost to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in six games a couple of years ago. But this is their opportunity. It's the biggest game in the history of the Raptors franchise and the biggest game for the Milwaukee Bucks since they won the title back in 1971, I think it was. So as big of a game as you can possibly imagine going on tonight, I'll be looking forward to watching it, and hopefully I'll be able to make it without too much trouble on the long drive with three young kids down to the beach to get ready for Memorial Day weekend. If you are a fan of this show, which many of you are, download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss any of it. We are going to be debuting a new long-form podcast, which will be up soon, called Wins and Losses. It's long-form interviews with me and a variety of people from across the sports, media, business, political world. I think you guys are really going to like it. First one is going to debut very shortly, so everything going well there. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. I don't know if the first one's going to drop before Memorial Day. I think it's probably not. But next week we should have it up and be ready to roll.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.